Take Off, the Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce. Today, I'm joined by the full crew again, Emily, Travis, and Matt. How are we doing, everyone?
Great.
Doing well.
Also doing well.
Yeah, as I was saying, you can tell this is a morning recording. We probably got like our first couple sips of coffee. It's like, I'm good.
He drinks coffee.
Yeah.
The caffeine is still settling in.
Matt's on his third broth of the day.
Oh yeah. No coffee here. I don't need that stuff.
I think Matt's ready to go. I saw him working in our outline earlier, doing some crazy math. Yeah. He's locked and loaded.
I thrive without caffeine. Let's go.
I mean, look, we're like trending into the world of like basically every other podcast. I'm picturing like anyone watching this on YouTube, there's going to be like a little summary at the bottom of timestamps. It'll be like 1 minute, 22 seconds. Team talks about Matt's bone broth use and productivity. It's like, here we go. I'll have to hop on that train. Yeah, I guess I'll answer the question myself a little bit more verbose. We didn't get a lot from the rest. Doing great. The Columbus meetup this past weekend was fantastic. We had probably 150 people come out. It's not our last one of the year, actually. For those listening who want to make it out to a future one, we have a few more on the calendar. You can find them at 10xtravel.com/events. But just super fun kind of environment. It's almost like a big happy hour where 10x Travel, you know, covers all the, you know, drinks and food. Hear Points and Miles stories. It almost feels like kind of podcast type banter in the real world. And I really enjoyed it. So I think I might be one coffee ahead of everyone else on the show so far. But yeah.
We'll call that the East Coast advantage. Matt's got an extra hour of being awake. Bryce has had more time for the coffee to settle in.
I've been up there for 5 hours. I don't know where this extra hour matters here.
Yeah, we're currently on that lunch break, which is also bone broth. Well, anyway, in today's episode, we are seeking to sound like your grandparents telling you about the price of gas, because we're going to be talking about a lot of things around the question of, are points and miles worth less than they used to be?
Back in my day.
Not to sound like that. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like
I used
we're
to
in that...
fly to Europe for 5,000 points.
I feel like we're in that, is it progressive, where it's like all the people just becoming their parents?
Becoming your parents. I love those commercials.
We're doing that here in real time. So we're going to talk about, is this just a case of us being kind of spoiled by the good old days? Has there been a real measurable shift in the value of points and miles? We'll dive into some specific examples like Delta's wild award pricing that's often discussed, hotel cert frustrations, and more, including sharing our personal experiences, including bookings that felt disappointing and others that still delivered amazing value. So first, I want to start with just a personal gut check from everyone. How do points feel to you now, given that you've been doing this hobby for a number of years, most of us for quite some time? I'll dive in first and I'll give my own answer here to give you all time to get some more caffeine.
Oh, sure. Down. Just go first, Bryce. Yeah, no one else wanted to go.
I'm happy to defer, but I'm feeling caffeinated and ready to go. So I think there's definitely been a shift. Like, to answer the question kind of right up front, how have I kind of perceived the change in value of points and miles over, it's been over 10 years now, I guess, doing this. So there's definitely been a shift. I think points and miles still feel to me like they are of roughly equivalent value to what they used to be, but a lot of things have changed. Like, you have programs that have kind of come on, others that have tapered off, rule changes. Of course, the ability to earn points with many new cards and policies around those has changed. But I don't know that when I, you know, ask myself this question, that there's like a definitive like, oh, absolutely. You know, like, gas used to be a nickel type thing, to where like there's if I have let's say 200,000 points and miles, I feel like that is dramatically less valuable than it would have been, say, like 5 to 8 years ago. But there definitely seems to be more kind of like variability to it. Like, you'll have like program like values that are wildly inconsistent from each other and even inconsistent from their past selves. You'll have kind of more like sweet spot focus on the kind of the unicorn type bookings that you have to take to find those. Maybe those are a little bit less available. But if I'm sitting there thinking like, hey, how many miles could I expect to pay for a flight like to Asia or to Europe? I think that number is probably within like 15 to 25% of what it was 8 years ago, which is fantastic, because that's kind of the great concern in this entire hobby, is that there's all these points and miles that we earn. You know, a lot of people listening to this are probably sitting on quite a few of them, and devaluations could really take out a lot of value that you've earned quickly, and you have no control over them. And a lot of times you have really no heads up. You'll just wake up to the fun email with the most terrifying subject line of points and miles, like, exciting updates to our loyalty program.
Yeah.
Like, hint, everyone, none of it's going to be exciting, you know. It's like, oh, free Wi-Fi, and we slashed the value of our points by 80%. So, yay. It's usually something like that. But overall, I don't think it's been dramatically like a dramatic fall off. And I think that I'm very happy to see that.
Yeah, I generally agree. Despite points costs generally across the board going up, I also feel as if the ability to earn those has gone up as well. So it's kind of this balancing game between, oh, it costs more. Okay, then now you can earn more. And I really think splitting it out between airlines and hotels, I really feel as if we've kind of over the last year or two found a good balance in the airline space. Yes, some programs still devalue, but in the past, it was almost always a devaluation. But now I think some airlines, especially international airlines or airlines based outside of the US, are seeing an opportunity to drive value to their own programs by revaluing, you know, specifically Flying Blue, Virgin Atlantic, Iberia still offers great value. And so I feel that we're seeing a give and take. Like, we're at this balancing point where the airline industry as a whole, some want to devalue because maybe they want people using their points less. Others see an opportunity to get more customers. And so they revalue to make it better. So I feel that kind of for the first time in the airline industry, we're at a bit of this good balance point. The programs that are high value now may not be the same ones that are high value in 6, 12, 24 months from now. But I think
looking at you, Alaska, in this pending upcoming change.
Yeah. But when it comes to hotels, that still just feels like a complete race to the bottom to me. We see more and more devaluations, things disguised as, oh, more opportunities and ways to use your points that are really just ways for you to use more of your points for the same room.
Yeah. I think the point you made about, you know, things costing more, but also, you know, the welcome bonuses are more, so you can earn just as fast. I think back to like the SPG days where a 35,000 point bonus was incredible. You could book like 5 nights at a hotel then. But so like, we're not seeing 35,000 point bonuses anymore. We're seeing 100 plus. I mean, some still are low like that, but it just goes to show that like, yes, things have changed. Things have gotten more expensive, but so have the welcome offers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I kind of echo what you're saying, Travis. It's never been easier to earn more points, but it's also, generally speaking, never been more expensive to redeem those points kind of across the board. It is nice to see a couple people, maybe like you're saying, like Flying Blue and a couple others, feel like they're turning the page just a little bit on that. But historically, I mean, this space to me just feels like a depreciating asset, no matter how you look at it. Points are almost never going to become more valuable tomorrow than they are today. It's going to be the opposite. So you just have to go into it with that mindset, knowing that that's the case. And then any random positive movements, you have to like not expect those, but look at those as kind of a win that's out of the normalcy of the space.
Yeah. Man,
that would absolutely be great though. If points appreciated in value.
We yes. would be running some points fire like outlet and we'd all be like independently points rich and talking about like our rate of return on transferable currencies last month, you know, like it'd be great. Travis would throw on a red headband. I like the points.
Yeah.
But you know.
I think like the most obvious way that things have become like worth less than they were is just with the free night certificates. Because those values really haven't changed in years, but the price of the hotels you want to use them at has increased. So a 25K Marriott certificate is worth almost nothing.
I have one of those every year, and I don't think I've used it for the last 3 years. I need to just cancel that card.
But I don't know where you would use it.
You know,
you can just do that right here on the episode. We can, like, you know, I'll watch you.
You know, I haven't verified it. I don't know how many points it costs, but there's, if you're wanting one, and I feel like it should be in that 25 to 35K range, there's a Courtyard here in Houston that has a new dim sum restaurant that's apparently being run by a like Michelin-trained chef. It's literally inside a Courtyard by Marriott. So I haven't tried it yet. All of the like local Houston food influencers are raving about it. So that could be a fun way of using it to go and stay there. And
but
then just...
Can I, Can't I go eat at the restaurant and then just not stay at the courtyard? That is an option too, right?
No, I don't think so.
It's the only way to get a room at the dim sum restaurant to be a guest of the hotel.
Try to get him to accept that $25K free night serve for like an appetizer or something.
Yeah.
Hotels have definitely been kind of going straight downhill, as you all mentioned. There's one main exception to that. It's the one we talk about most frequently. We're going to talk about it through the rest of this episode. But I guess the one silver lining to that I find is it's almost easier to do hotel award searches because there's only one pretty good option in most cases, unless you have like, you know, a unique property or, you know, tons and
tons of... That's a stretch.
You can't forget about Travis's passion for the 1 to 2.
Yeah, but we got some bummer news on Hilton, last week? Yeah, now what, 400 million points per night is what they're saying max pricing is.
I guess infinite minus one.
Yes,
correct. Infinite minus one, yeah.
Right, but, you know, if you transfer your points, it's only infinity minus two? I don't know.
Yeah.
Fourth infinity point free. I do feel like, I guess, one factor that we do need to kind of acknowledge as we talk about, like, the changing value of points and miles over this time is that, like, the prices of things have changed, too, cash-wise, right?
Yes.
Like, inflation and all that kind of stuff. So if at least for myself, I think all of us somewhat kind of nodded their head on that when I said, like, the value of points and miles over the past, like, 5 to 8 years feels like it might be, like, 15 to 25%, like, up. But, like, that's also what probably cash prices have done for travel and everything else. So... without turning this into like economics hour with 10X Travel, I just wanted to toss it out there to get ahead of like the inevitable comments like, you missed like the key underlying point of this. So I acknowledge you.
Especially still in the post-COVID world, like travel has, from a cash basis, arguably never been more expensive. I feel like we're finally starting to see some of that maybe change on a cash price basis. Like
for sure.
Starting to see hotels not as expensive, you know, probably for a number of different economic reasons. But I mean, literally over the last 5 years, travel, as soon as we saw that post-COVID boom, I mean, cash prices on hotels has just, and flights is, for that matter too, just been insane. And the points price has not, to your point, escalated, you know, in step, so it seems, with those cash prices.
That's right. Yeah. But, and then kind of shifting to kind of the next phase here, one of the other major changes we have seen with points in the last 5 to 10 years or so is the shift toward dynamic pricing, which is kind of, it makes it almost more difficult to address this issue head on because it's dynamic pricing. You'll find some options that are still pretty good. And I guess you could anecdotally look at those and convince yourself that it's still the good old days of, you know, 2012. But you do have the downside of that too, where you go to run a hotel award search. Maybe it's for the weekend of some like big event in town or some concert or holiday. And it's like, oh, this is 4 times higher than it would have been, you know, 5 years ago. Like there's a lot more variability there. And of course, that's completely under the control of the hotels to optimize around demand. So I guess I'm curious, how has kind of the shift to dynamic pricing affected all of your kind of travel planning, travel booking? Do you think that like dynamic is a basically a synonym for devaluation in this case, or is there maybe an upside here based on your experience?
Yeah, I spoke about this, I think, in our episode about like hot takes or controversial takes. And I actually think that the dynamic pricing has more potential upsides than downsides, which surely someone will disagree with me on still, but you know, if I'm looking to take a flight and I know that it's typically 80,000 points, but because of dynamic pricing, it's 90, 95,000. I don't mind spending the extra 10 to 15,000. And I'd honestly rather have that than the all or nothing system of traditional award pricing, where it's things are either at a saver level, the 80,000 point level, or you got to jump up to 250,000 points. You know, there's a point where it doesn't really become as worth it. But I think in general, we're seeing some variability both on the low end, the middle, and the high end, to where you might not be paying the lowest amount of points, but there's more options available because of it.
I think my biggest beef with dynamic pricing is just the unknown. It makes it really, really difficult to plan a trip. If you think of what I presume to be like the traditional family vacation, if you're saying, hey, in 2 years, we want to go to Hawaii for a family of five, we're going to save up over the next 2 or 3 years. We might open a card or two, but we're going to, you know, earn our points and miles from travel, from just everyday spend, whatever. You have such a moving target to be like, hey, I want to stay at this Marriott in Maui. What's it going to cost? Well, I don't know. One, we're going to have to wait until, you know, next year when the award calendar or the availability opens up. But two, there could be infinite changes in the categorization and pricing of that property between now and then. And three, I may not have the points in my account yet, so I may have to continue saving up or buy them or whatever. And it's just a completely moving target to know what that's going to be. So I think there are some positives to it for sure, but I think the unknown makes it really, really hard for, you know, a traditional family vacation to be able to plan and essentially budget your points, because you're really not going to know what it's going to cost in that perspective, especially if you're trying to travel around peak holiday seasons or, you know, the week after Christmas or just holidays in general, typically times when in a dynamic space, they're really going to jack up the prices. You're at an unfair advantage in that perspective. I think to your point, Travis, the part about knowing what typical is, and even if it's slightly inflated, that's fine. Like, I don't have beef with that. But I think the biggest is just, yeah, like I mentioned, the unknown that dynamic creates.
And that has negative impacts, of course, to those of us redeeming points and miles, but kind of on the teaching side of things too. I find that that's a huge barrier for bringing people kind of into the hobby, because you can't show kind of a clear example of like, if you do this, you can expect to get this other thing. Yeah. It's more like, well, if you do this and you might get this thing, but you might only be halfway there and you'll have to kind of change your plans. And then like the first impression that a lot of people get of points and miles, oh, this is kind of a rigged game.
Yeah.
And in like some scenarios, like what Matt described with like the holidays and peak pricing and stuff, it definitely feels that way. It's certainly not always the case, but it's hard to get over that first impression.
Yeah. I think back to the first trip I ever took, and I started planning for that in 2017, and I didn't go until 2019. And I felt confident and comfortable enough with that amount of time to be able to rely on the pricing I was seeing and be able to kind of like plan what cards I was going to get. If I were trying to do that now, I would definitely budget to earn more than I would expect to see based on what the prices are now.
Yeah, my perspective on the shifts to dynamic pricing is that it almost created some very clear winners and some very clear losers in that change. So, I think the clear winners are the ones who have options. It's like, I can travel flexible dates. I can travel on short notice. I have many places that I particularly want to go. I'm not kind of like laser focused on that, you know, Marriott in Hawaii, as Matt mentioned. But on the flip side, like the losers, I think it's the fixed vacation schedules. It's people who kind of work in like teaching or like have kids' schedules to navigate around. It's like, yes, we have to travel, you know, for spring break on the third week of March from Saturday to Saturday, and we want to go to one of these really popular destinations. That's when the prices get jacked up, and you don't have those beautiful loopholes anymore where it's like, your program charges $25,000 for every single flight, and therefore I'm going to use this to book a flight to the Olympics on like the day before opening day. Like, you just don't get those kind of beautiful sweet spots anymore. But we see a lot of folks coming out ahead with the spontaneous travel at the last minute stuff, or the, you know, we don't really necessarily care where we want to go. Let's just kind of look at our options. You can really find some good deals.
Yeah, but like, quite frankly, I don't know that that's any different than it was before, you know, before those peak travel times. In this all or nothing system that we had before, usually it was nothing. It was, there's not any award availability, or it's, again, at the really, really high rates during that time. Whereas dynamic pricing at least gives some potential optimism that there will be something. If you're going into it expecting it to be the lowest points possible, then maybe reevaluate some expectations a bit. But there's at least potential hope that there's some that's in the middle ground for it.
Yeah, I think one sort of part to that that always I found recently has left a sour taste in my mouth is, I feel like in this dynamic pricing world, I have to always be monitoring the pricing of books, of stuff that I have booked, to see if prices have gone down. And I know some programs are supposed to, you know, auto credit you a difference, but like in reality, that almost never happens.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not constantly, but you know, a couple times before an upcoming trip, I'll run an award search at a hotel and see if they're charging $5,000 or $10,000 less points per night. If so, I'll cancel and rebook. You know, obviously the opposite can be true, but same with flights. It feels uneasy and uncertain. Like, I'm probably getting taken advantage of here, or not getting the actual best deal because they might, you know, be short on demand for that flight and be offering it less. But because I locked it in at that one price, you know, I need to just double check and make sure that I'm not leaving more meat on the table. And I know that that's probably good practice in general, but it feels it feels like I'm having to do extra, or I should be doing extra work to make sure I'm not sort of leaving something out there or overpaying still in this kind of dynamic nature.
More FOMO and uncertainty. Booked at the floor anymore.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know what would be a really interesting card benefit is if one of the banks said, hey, if you book through our travel portal, you know, you redeem your points directly through our portal and the price goes down, we'll refund you the difference. So we'll watch the price from whenever you book, and whatever the lowest it was after that, we'll just refund you the points difference.
I, for one, love the idea, Travis. I can't wait to see what the first bank who kind of picks up and runs with it. And a special shout out, in the off chance that Richard Kerr listens to this podcast, this is your chance. Bring it to your program. People are going to love it. And please, but please credit Travis with the idea. That's T-R-A-F-V-I-S.
Oh, can't even spell my name. Wow.
I was supposed to say T-R-A-F-I-S.
Are you sure you didn't go B-R-Y-C-E?
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to do the whole stand on your shoulders thing. Nice theory. I'm going to name it now as it goes in the history books. Thankfully, there's a recorded record of this that we listened to by thousands of people who all at this very moment took out their phones, open up the podcast screen, push 5 stars to remember when this happened at the timestamp. You can be a part of the movement.
Yeah. I mean, the good news through all of this, though, is like TRVIAS mentioned earlier, is there's still some carriers offering better value, especially international carriers, which I think is part of the hurdle that we see with people that are new, is they're always much more comfortable with the US-based carriers because it's who they know.
Yeah.
So the idea of booking through Virgin Atlantic to book a Delta flight feels weird, both because
it kind of
feels a little weird, right? I mean,
and most people, when you're new, may not have ever heard of Virgin Atlantic, but looking at other programs to find better value is definitely a plus. And with the rise of award search tools out there, or our award booking service, if you just want help navigating the complexity,
shameless plug.
Is a shameless plug. Absolutely. there's more opportunities now to help the average person get their flights booked. Whether, you know, in the past it was you're just doing it yourself, whereas now it's assistance with other tools or handing it off to a concierge service like our award booking service that can just help figure it all out for you.
I have a side note and tangent sort of related to that, but not really. But for whatever reason, this non-caffeinated person had a light bulb moment while you were describing that, Travis. Can you think of a alternative real world example that is basically the same thing as booking through, you know, an alliance partner or whatever? So booking through Virgin Atlantic to fly Delta, ooh, like where does that exist in the real world?
I mean, I can, it's still kind of like within the industry, but like buying a gift card at like Office Depot and then the gift card is for your supermarket.
Yeah, fair enough.
I guess, kind of.
I can't tell if Matt has one and is waiting for us to
was just trying to like think of, hey, here's a real world example of this. I was like, actually, I don't really have anything or anything good.
I mean, honestly, it's 100% related, but I kind of like to think of it as booking through like an Expedia or a Travelocity. I don't know which ones are still relevant anymore, right? But a lot of people went through these online travel booking platforms to book a flight. So you're not booking with Delta directly. You're booking with Expedia to get your Delta ticket. It's kind of the exact same thing. You know, it's like for cash flights, if you go to Google Flights, put in your search, it tells you the different prices from where you buy it. And most people probably just click the cheapest one, even if it's one they've never heard of, like cheapest airfare ever in the world.com. And you're like, I don't know how sketchy this is. I've never heard of it.
Now we have to buy that domain.
But I'm saving $42 versus going to Delta directly. You're kind of doing the exact same thing here. You're going to someone else who's pricing the exact same flight cheaper than everyone else and booking that way.
Yeah, although it's still more of a direct booking, of course, too. Like, it's not like I almost feel scared booking travel through like third party sites now. Yeah. It just feels like, am I actually buying this? Like, what is kind of happening on the back end? But thankfully, with you know, the partner awards, it's not quite that disconnected. It's really like they have these kind of formal partnerships. They make their availability, you know, open on other platforms and stuff. So at least it is a little bit more secure in that regard. But yeah, comfort with those brands is kind of the big thing. And you know, another plug for it, I think the award booking service is obviously a great tool to help take that work off of your plate, which is wonderful. But it's also a great tool for learning, because you're like, yeah, I told them I want to go to, you know, wherever, Rome, and I'm booking this through something called Flying Blue that I've never even heard of before. And now you kind of start to see how that works and all the many examples that you don't choose. And it really, you know, illuminates the map, if you will. But I want to move us on now to kind of hotel programs and certificate value, the thing we kind of teased earlier, you know, Matt's appetizer here. So, I mean, I feel like at this point, do I even intro this, or should I just get out of the way and be like, Matt, go?
No, Emily, you know? Emily teed it up. She's got the lead off batter here.
Okay. Oh, I teed it up?
We did earlier in the episode.
Am I talking certs?
Yeah. I mean, if you want, you don't have to. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but.
Oh, no.
I didn't
no,
want to steal your moment of glory.
I mean, I stand by my point that they're just getting harder and harder to use, because the prices per night keep going up. The value of the certificates don't go up. And you're just kind of left with what used to be a really easy way to justify an annual fee on a card that came with a free cert is now like, oh, well, I have a 35K cert, but there's no hotel properties that are that price. So now I have to top it off with 15,000 more points. And it's just kind of that to me is the most clear place where things have been devalued.
Well, and the worst is the games they play, like Marriott specifically. Is Marriott the only one that has top offs on certificates? I think they are, right?
I think so.
The games they play, so you know, a 50K cert, you can top it off to 65K.
Right.
The number of hotels that are priced at 66,000 points per night is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, like the ability to top off a certificate was claimed to be, oh, you can get so much more flexibility from it. No, it's just a disguised way to get you to redeem more points for the same thing as before.
Correct. That's correct.
Wait, are we doing the hot takes episode again, or are we still talking about points? Because this is getting
every
spicy.
Episode
I'm
is
here
hot.
For
every
it.
Episode yeah. is hot takes, Bryce. Don't
Boom.
You know?
I'm gonna change the name. Hot takes. Eh? Yeah. Points and miles. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've still been able to use like the 85K one, some 35K ones, but the 25K one that I still get is just. It dies in my account every year.
In the future episode, we should identify like the best properties you can book for a 25K cert.
Well,
it's like,
we can't because
yes.
it'll change in like 2 weeks after we publish
right.
it. Yeah. It'll just change all
well,
the categories.
I mean, yeah. We're sitting here recording this, and I'm worried that like within the next week, there's going to be some major, like huge devaluation, and like our podcast goes live, and like, you know, I don't think the value of points and miles has changed all that much. And like, you know, it's like, who are these
Well, and it's these Marriott certs in particular, they made sense when the first iteration of the Bonvoy program came out, where 85K was the highest for a top tier property, 50K was a solid middle, 35K was like a pretty good low value hotel. But now with the costs going up, you know, some Marriott's 120K plus per night, you can't even top that off.
Nope.
For it anymore. And 85K is like is generally not getting you an aspirational property.
Shout out Hilton here for their free night certificates being uncapped.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it in this space.
It is, but and as much of a Hilton fanboy as I have been in the past, with the recent devaluations that you mentioned earlier, I always felt that the best use of that uncapped Hilton free night was to add an extra night on to your existing stay at one of these high-end aspirational properties. But now with their big devaluations, like the Waldorf Astoria in Cabo is now 190,000 points a night. The Waldorf Maldives is 200K. And I know that this is not where everyone is staying. But
TRAVIS is.
Yeah, no, there's an F. Travis is a huge fan.
That massive inflation in those points costs makes it to where can you even afford to do the five nights in the first place to add on the last one? So even though it's uncapped, if you're using it that way, if you're using it in the let me add a sixth night onto my fifth night free stay that I only paid four nights for,
the four nights are still ridiculously priced.
Yeah, correct.
You would need 800,000 points for the Waldorf Maldives, which is nuts. Like, you would need that as a base to get your fifth night free and then drop your sixth night certificate on top of it. So, again, I'm sure there's still some very valid use cases, but even though it's uncapped, I still look at that as a pretty significant devaluation.
I'm in this one deep because I have multiple Marriott cards. I get a 25K, a 35K, a 50, and a 85K free night certificate every year. Mm-hmm. And every year, at least one goes unused, usually the 25K. And it's like over the last 4 to 5 years, it's been almost a race to the bottom to where the first couple of years, I would get tremendous value. You know, 2017, 18, 19, whatever, I would get tremendous value of the certificates. And every year, it's just one step down, not nearly getting as much goodness out of the certificates. My favorite, I mean, it's still the first time we stayed in Hawaii. I keep talking about Hawaii. I don't mean to, but we like it, whatever. At Mauna Kea in Hawaii, that was, the second time, the first time we did the old Marriott Nights and Flights package, which RIP, that thing was awesome.
That was awesome.
But the second was the Marriott was running 5 50K free night certificates as a welcome bonus on one of their Marriott cards. So we used that and redeemed all 5 certificates at Mauna Kea. Now, 90, 100K for pretty much per night for all of their nights. So like certificates are out there. You presumably could top off an 85K one, but even then it might be hard pressed to find. So it's in a matter of just a couple of years. And I know that's more based on their categorization of the property, but back to your points, it's the certificates have not kept up with the devaluations and category changes to allow you to still have access to some of these properties, even as they've moved way up.
Yeah.
It's like they've been left behind, right? Like, correct. It's almost like it feels like there's no one thinking about that.
Right.
And it's advantage to the loyalty program to keep it that way. And now it's almost like, at what point can you not, you cannot call them free night certificates anymore? They almost feel more like coupons. Save 50% on your points stay because you're going to have to top off, or like it's just unusable in the same sense that like, here's a coupon for a free Chipotle entree of $4 or less. Thank you. Like, I appreciate that greatly.
And here's our shameless plug to sign up for our class action lawsuit against the banks for their free night certificates where you can't actually get a free night.
Yeah, I guess it would be the hotels,
I thought we were
right?
Not necessarily
the banks. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Shout out Richard Kirk. The second thing you're going to get is actually a subpoena. So here's an idea in a subpoena. We call it a subpoena sandwich.
It's funny. I think we've been recording this podcast long enough that if you go back to some of the earlier episodes, probably most of us are praising free night certificates. We're like, this is the easiest way to get value out of your annual fee. And now
you can see the change in real time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Someone's going to clip up like one of those contradicting videos where like you're just saying opposite.
These guys are a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it wouldn't be that hard. Right. And I know that like this is maybe not the most desirable change. Bump the 35 and 50K up. So the 35 becomes a 50K, the 50K becomes an 85, and then change the 85 to a new higher tier of like 100K and let you top off plus or minus 20,000. So
or
that's
just uncap it.
Yeah, I'd say uncap top off.
I mean,
fair.
It's a $650 credit card that it, annual fee credit card that it comes with. Like uncap that sucker.
Yeah.
Even if you raise the fee by like $50 a year or something, if
let's not get carried away.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to play both sides here, you know. Well, let's transition to that because I think this is the good news part of this entire episode. We're going to talk about the changes in credit card bonuses and trends over that same time. I think Emily kind of mentioned it earlier. You know, that has definitely gone up noticeably, well more than like the 15 to 25% claim that I made earlier. You know, it feels like my early days in this hobby, like seeing a 100K bonus was like seeing a unicorn in the wild. Like you would immediately tell people about it. Like, holy cow, I saw this in the mail. Like, and that's even counting like the many programs that we often bag on for having low value. Even they didn't have bonuses that were in the six figures. But now you see, you know, at least one of those with pretty much every major bank at some point. Some of them are like pretty consistent and easy to find. So, you know, I'm still very much in the camp that right now might be the easiest time I've ever seen to earn points and miles from like a pure numbers perspective. So in my opinion, that has at least kept pace with a lot of the changes and devaluations on redeeming and just, you know, allowed you to earn points by the like six figure, you know, bucket of them.
An important quick reminder here that when you're evaluating welcome bonuses, do not simply look at the number being offered as a part of the welcome offer. You have to understand the currency that comes along with it. Yeah. 200,000 Hilton points is not better than some flexible currency that you might get, I don't know, 75,000 just off the bat. It could be, but it's not guaranteed just because it's a bigger number.
Yeah, same thing is like when you travel internationally to a country that are not immediately familiar with their currency values, like, you know, maybe look up the conversion to US dollars before you splurge on that hotel that only costs like 80, you know, of that currency per night. And you realize, oh, wait, that's not 80 US dollars. So, yeah, any other thoughts on, I guess, on how offers have changed? Kind of, how do all of you feel about that claim that right now might be the easiest time in recent history to earn points and miles? Like, does anyone disagree with that? What am I missing here?
Look, I want to hand this over to Matt.
Yeah.
Because he's got a full 17-hour long lecture typed up in our notes here. So Matt, take it away.
All right, welcome to class, folks. Bryce mentioned 10x travel economics earlier. We'll dive in.
Let's call this points math with Matt.
There
now
you
say
go.
That yes, three times fast.
Matt, quick, yeah, put on a bow tie before you go into the section.
In today's lecture, we're going to analyze how the minimum spend component of welcome bonuses has never been stronger when you look at it from an economic standpoint. So what does that mean? Well, basically, if you look back over the last 10 years, and we'll call it 2015 to 2025 present day, I would say that that's probably been the modern heyday of points and miles. If you look at where kind of this, heck, maybe we're in a points bull market currently. I don't know. But points really, you know, they've obviously been around before then, but over the last 10 years or so, points have really, really, really picked up, become more mainstream just across society, you know, all the fun things. Obviously, a huge component for us here in the U.S. For points is based on the U.S. dollar. You have to spend money to earn points in a number of different ways. If you look at economically, the U.S. dollar has lost approximately 26% of its purchasing power from 2015 to 2025. I'm sure we're all aware the inflationary pressure and changes that just, you know, happens over time, unfortunately. But 26%, according to the Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Understanding that fact kind of on one side, if you look back at 2015, like Emily kind of was saying, or that time frame, a common welcome offer was 35, 50,000, 60,000 points, right? Okay, awesome, fine. Like we just mentioned before, a lot of times nowadays you're seeing 100,000, 150,000, you know, maybe 80, 90, whatever. You're seeing an elevated number of points being offered at the same time for that welcome offer. You know what the one thing that really, you know, generally speaking hasn't changed? There might be some nuances here and there. The actual minimum spending requirement to meet that welcome offer. So you're still spending, I would say the average, y'all correct me if I'm wrong here, I threw out $4,000 as the average minimum spend requirement for a welcome offer. Sure, we'll see some, you know, two or 3,000. We might see some business cards with five, 7,500, 10K, 15. But generally speaking, especially on a consumer card, $4,000 to me seems to be about the average minimum spend required. And of course, that's typically going to be in about 3 months for most products, but some span to 6 months or a few different terms. But, you know, we'll just kind of looking at this from a 30,000 foot viewpoint. So you're spending $4,000, typically the same in 2015 as you are today. That really hasn't changed. And I should have caveated this, but please, if you work at a bank, just turn this part off. I really don't want to make any changes to this component, but you've made it this far, so I guess whatever. We have screwed the pooch.
But we did give you a good idea on a you know, fair difference refund of hotels. So
yeah, right. We're handing you one and hoping that you'll take that instead of this one. So, We've seen that the value of the United States dollar has decreased by approximately 26% over the last 10 years, but minimum spend requirements have not changed. That means you're spending less, you know, nominal dollars to meet those spend requirements. You know, if you look at a real world example, $4,000 to meet minimum spend in 2015, that was $4,000 in 2015 dollars. Today, that's only going to be just shy of $3,000. So $2,900 is what you would have to spend today to, you know, have the equivalent of $2,015.
I believe your math says it's $2,962.80, Matt.
Well, there you go. All right, we'll get specific. Like I said, yes. Just shy of $3,000. So what's that? I mean, that 26%, you're spending more money, yes, but the actual buying power of those dollars has, in a way, increased pretty substantially because these have not changed. So that's my argument of more or less why on the minimum spend side, things have actually improved. And that's also separate from the fact that the points that you will typically earn from that spend across the board has probably improved from an average of 50 to 60K points to 100, 100 plus. So
yeah, it's not just the bonus period, right? If all of your spend is higher, your earnings rate is higher.
Correct.
And I'd like to acknowledge the fact that Matt just became the points and miles version of Jerome Powell. after that little speech. He's like, if you look at the value of the U.S. currency over the last 10 years, it's really held pretty strong. And so second YouTube little snippet preview, like Matt's economic lecture on U.S. currencies powered by bone broth.
Well, and I can continue on this. If we want to continue on the economics and inflation side of things, we're probably the two categories that the average U.S. consumer spends their most money in. I don't have data on this. I did not look this up.
10XT Plus memberships and award booking.
Besides that, those are caveats. I would say food, it is probably the biggest category, and the subcategories of that would be, dining and then groceries. More positive is this. Those are two of the most lucrative bonus categories across a number of cards that you can get bonus spend on. So you're spending obviously more money for your tomatoes at the grocery store, but you're earning more points for those if you have the correct cards. So back to our central theme or one of the central themes and points of today's episodes, it's arguably never been easier to earn points in mass quantities from now real everyday spending and not just the welcome bonuses or some of the games people obviously try to play than it is currently. So it's not all doom and gloom out there, folks, and the data proves it.
Ooh, who needs real US Professor dollars Matt. When you can just keep earning points?
Correct.
That's a mic drop for Matt. That wasn't my microphone. It was a pen.
I'm going to re-queue up that part of the episode when I'm waiting to check out and pay $22 for a carton of eggs. I'm just like, this is a good thing. This is a good thing.
Yes.
This is a good thing.
Yes.
You know. Ha. So I don't know if there's anything else to add after that. Matt covered that very thoroughly, and I wholeheartedly agree. Earning points just feels automatic today, and I hope that doesn't change, but everything does in this hobby, and it's we almost expect it, and that'll be okay.
What I will add for Matt is that looking at this random thing I just pulled up, is that food is the second highest spend category.
Oh, rent. The other one's just got to be rent or mortgage
housing.
Or something.
Yeah.
Typically a transaction you can't put on a card.
Yeah,
except
one
for
notable exception.
Yeah,
who's got their shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. You're done, Richard. You're done for today.
Yeah. So I'm curious how these two changing dynamics with points and miles earning as well as kind of redemptions kind of changing all the place. How has that changed the way that you think about kind of card portfolio strategy? Does that impact the cards that you decide to keep in your wallet, the types of points that you earn? How do you think about kind of paying annual fees for things like ongoing free night certs? What's different from 2015? Today,
for me, I would like to say that paying the annual fees for free night certs makes it harder to justify the annual fees, but I'm so bad at purging my wallet and closing cards and
hold up.
Okay,
you had an entire
we'll send it to you afterward.
So
listen to your own episode.
Despite those, I do still find ways to use them. Despite the challenges and the struggles, even if I wish there was more value that I could get from them. I don't really think that it's changed it much. I've always generally prioritized flexible points, and now more than ever, I just continue to make that same prioritization. So I don't know that it's really changed.
Yeah, I'm with you. For me, it's not changed anything. It's just reinforced the fact that flexible currencies have to be your primary category of earn. To be able to quite literally, like we call them, have the flexibility to be able to route them where you can for the maximum stuff. It's not to say that earning a American Airlines Advantage mile over a flexible currency is a bad move. It's not. It's just, you're locked in to that program and their redemption options, whereas flexible currencies, which I would argue have gotten stronger over the last 10 years and have not. That's another caveat tangent we could go down.
There's more programs.
They have not really devalued. We have seen very little transfer rates change. There have been obviously a handful that have come and gone of, hey, this used to be a transfer partner, it's not, but it is. I feel like I could probably count on one hand, maybe worse than two, where there's been a transfer rate change to a program even through all these devaluations.
We also have to think about the number of transfer bonuses that there have been. Like, yeah. It's just been a hot streak for years of like, oh, here's a new month. There's five new transfer bonuses and you can basically double your points.
In some way, that's almost the bank's way of fighting back, I feel like, against the devaluations of the currency. Because the banks are in a tough spot. Yeah. You know, they're buying these miles from an airline. Presumably, obviously I don't know what the contracts state, but, you know, when a transaction happens, the banks have presumably they've run some numbers and have a baseline sort of valuation of that currency and what their customers can then expect to get redeemed value from. You know, the airline then turns around and says, hey, we're chopping these rates by 20%. You know, that does kind of put the bank in a tough spot too.
I've always wondered how that works too.
Yeah.
Presumably there's no guidelines in those contracts of the banks say, like, if we're going to buy all these miles, you can't devalue them immediately. Because we've seen instances in which that happened, but like, they've got to be upset when it's like, hey, our biggest transfer partner that we just paid hundreds of millions of dollars to for miles just decided to devalue these. It's like, I mean, ouch.
So that puts them in a tough spot. I feel like the transfer bonus stuff is one way they kind of fight back against that. Of course, I don't know who's paying for that a little bit.
Yeah, but I've always thought, and this, by the way, everyone, this is all just kind of our speculation.
None of this is on the agenda today.
Yeah, none of this is
inside information.
And we're just is based on anything. Like, we know how the industry works, that when you transfer points, the banks have to buy them from the airlines. We know that that's how it works. But I've almost felt as if the transfer bonuses might be the opposite, that it's coming from the airlines because they want to sell more miles.
True.
Right? They know that when people transfer them, not everyone is a savvy person who's going to redeem them right away. And so they see it as, oh, we could get an increased payout right now, knowing that we're not going to have to actually cover that cost for 9-12 months on average. So I've always thought that it came from the airlines and stuff, basically being, hey, we want to incentivize people to transfer to our program so that we get paid for it right now.
Which kind of like opens the door toward like a potential like points and miles pump and dump scam. If you have some airline, give like a 70% transfer bonus, lock in a contract with the bank at a certain value. Everyone transfers their miles for the deal. And then like a week later, you're like, psych, 90% devaluation.
Well,
like, is that even illegal?
You say that, but that's kind of the concern that's a lot of people have with the Alaska/Hawaiian merger. Obviously, that went through last year, but we know that the transfer of points to Hawaiian, which is then allows you to backdoor into Alaska, ends June 30th. So coming up soon. I'm actually not sure when this episode airs, but regardless, it'll be
deadline,
soon.
Yeah.
This should be ahead of that date. But there's a lot of concern that, you know, should I transfer? Because they could announce a devaluation or no announced devaluation after that, you know, still would likely be a good option. But yeah, that's a real world concern, kind of highlighting the scenario you just outlined.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we didn't just give the banks another idea.
That
we'll use against us, right? So,
right.
I guess to Emily, if we could, have you changed your strategy at all around kind of earning points and miles cards retention in light of these changes?
Not really. I mean, I would say maybe I've prioritized earning like American Airlines miles out of anything lately, but that's just because I've got a good stockpile of flexible currencies. So I already kind of built that up it hasn't really changed much. I just have been able to get good value out of American Airlines miles. So I'm like, why not? Why not earn some more? Because I can't transfer them from anywhere.
Yeah.
That's another idea for the banks.
Idea number three, banks.
It's
very much the same for me. I do feel a heightened sense of anxiety of any significant points and miles balance that's in an airline or hotel program. It almost feels like it's just waiting to get cut. So I do spend this a little bit faster. I think that the rise of kind of more credit card products in the market with more big bonuses has made me move or like downplay category spend even more than I could emphasize in our hot takes episode, because it's great to earn like 2-4x on like the things that you like to spend on, but the alternative is a card offering 100-150k bonus. Like, that makes it more appealing to kind of, you know, shop around to new cards, keep lots of transferable currencies and so that the devalues don't hit as much, and really just kind of focus on that. It's kind of what we should have been doing the whole time. It just reinforces it. And I think from a mindset perspective, it has definitely like almost completely severed like the thinking around like, I'm earning these points for this particular thing. Like I want to earn Marriott points because I want to go to that Marriott in Hawaii that we've mentioned like five times now. And now it's almost like a complete disconnect. Yeah. Like, you know, earn points kind of strategically, but don't try to tie those lines to like earmarking them for particular things. And I think better outcomes, you should have done that from the start, really. So I guess like we can, let's transition to the emotional side of devaluation, since I kind of, you know, teased that with my previous couple sentences here. You know, do we just remember kind of the greatest hits of years past, or do we think that like things have kind of materially changed outside of like Matt's economic and math perspective? Like, as you kind of think back about redemptions of the past, is there anything that kind of stands out of like, almost like nostalgia? Like, gas used to cost a nickel. The Marriott in Hawaii used to only cost 80K points. That wasn't available.
SPG.
Like,
what, SPG. What's the first
SPG was the gas that's a nickel.
Yeah. That whole merger was the first time that I felt like I was ever like an outside fan of a company. Like, not a sports team. Like, when there's the whole, like, who's going to buy it? Is it going to be Marriott? Or I think it was Anbang was the other company. And it's like, we're rooting for like a certain way. It's like, come on. Like, and it did not turn out that way. But that's a good first mention. Is there anything I'm missing from the SPG saga that we can wax poetic about for a bit? The cards were beautiful. Purple.
The SPG.
Just everything. They delivered on everything. From top to bottom. Loyalty program. Elite status. Benefits at the hotel. I mean, it was just all around was how you should run a program.
Yeah, they ran a program that was focused on rewarding loyalty and truly doing that. Whereas virtually everyone else, even Hyatt in comparison, is always done from the business case. And I don't think, like, of course there was a good business case for it, but I don't think someone really looking at the program would look and say, oh, this is done to optimize shareholder value.
Those two things are at a stark contrast, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I do think we're going to be looking back, waxing poetically on Southwest in a couple of years.
From a different lens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sorry, that we just have come
used
through
to be
the
good.
Good days. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like comparing those, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I would not have talked about United the same way I do now. And I know everyone at home is like, oh, great.
Wait,
Travis is talking
about
United
now?
Again.
Yawn.
You know, we wouldn't have talked about, we used to only talk about Virgin Atlantic for booking ANA to Japan. Now it's one of the most popular programs to use for getting to Europe. There are some programs like Cathay Pacific that people don't talk about a lot that I know people are getting really good value from. And so it's easy for us to look back at the programs that were really good and say, oh, I wish it was like that still. And trust me, I still wish SPG was around. But it doesn't mean that there's not stuff, that there's not programs out there that have high value now. It never feels as good until it's gone.
Well, that brings up kind of an interesting next question here that combines a few from the upcoming agenda. So sorry for going a little off script here, but you know, 5 to 10 years from now, when we talk about 2025, what do you think we're going to be waxing about poetically, and why is it Hyatt? Because we're definitely, I guess, because this is an off the script question, I'll give my opinion first to give some time to think. But I do think Hyatt's the first thing that comes to mind. So for anyone who finds themselves stuck in kind of the mental loop of like, oh, it used to look like kind of so much easier and things used to be so great, you are living in that time right now with Hyatt redemptions. And someday, people who join the hobby later are going to be like, oh, what was it like to be, you know, I was about to say alive at that time. This sounds very dramatic for a Points and Miles podcast, but like, yeah, like when you could just, you know, you had so many options there, you know, you could book like kind of like low end properties, if you will, for like what, 4,500 points per night. But all the way up to even the high end stuff at 30, 35,000 points a night is still very doable for the average person. It is so dramatically better than any other hotel loyalty program right now that it definitely is the first answer I give when people ask like, what's the most likely devaluation to happen next? Probably Hyatt. It seems to make sense for them. Sorry, there's another idea that, you know, some ideas we shouldn't open the box and let out. That's another one. But
I've just accepted over the last 4 or 5 years that it's happening. And the fact that it hasn't happened past peak and off peak pricing is just a win in my book.
I totally agree. Yeah. It's like when it happens, I'll be like, I understand. Even if you almost like 50% increase in award prices, like, still maybe the best, like still looking pretty good. And then like on the airline front, I think it's not as obvious a choice, but the first one jumps to me is probably American Airlines. I think that they've done a pretty good job navigating all of this. You know, they went dynamic really early in the kind of change, but they seem to have kind of stayed true to leaving enough on the bone, as Matt kind of mentioned, to make it worthwhile for folks. You know, I just saw someone in the Facebook group yesterday booked, I think it was Chicago to LA for 5,000 AA miles in economy. Yeah, like that, those kind of deals are incredible. It's just inability to earn their miles in bulk until one of them takes Emily's idea of becoming a transfer partner. It makes it hard.
I think it's important to distinct in your statement the difference between A Advantage and American Airlines, because you might get some hate in the comments.
Oh yeah, wait, and
American Airlines being
Advantage,
like really really good. Yeah, we're just talking about A Advantage, as you would say.
Someone's listening to this right now, like delayed 2 hours on the tarmac of one of their flights, and they're like,
"Someone
no,
had a canceled flight with them recently."
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this guy
that's
couldn't
true.
Make it to the meetup.
Should have flown United.
We fly through thunderstorms that other people can't.
You know? Yes, yeah. I'm going to take a crazy prediction here that I really hope, if you make decisions about this for an airline or a hotel, just go away. Just go away. I think in 10 to 15 years from now, looking back on today, my bold prediction, my unfortunate prediction, my I hope this doesn't happen prediction, is we're going to look back and realize how many points currencies just weren't tied to the cash value of flights. I think that that's the inevitable level playing field, is people take like how Southwest and JetBlue do right now, where it's just you can book any flight at any time. Your miles are worth 1.8 cents each or 2 cents each that you redeem towards it. It's not the path that I want to see it go, but I don't know how likely it is, but I think that that would be the potential, or could be a potential path that a number of airlines go towards.
To say, you're saying that your prediction is that airlines are going to move towards that, or move away, the few that are still sort of like that are going to move away from it?
No, that more airlines will move towards that.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, I think dynamic pricing is kind of the first step where they're trying to kind of tie these things together. Like, dynamic pricing tries to tie together demand, supply, peak travel, et cetera. And I think simply saying, we'll just reflect that in the cash price and you redeem your points against the cash price directly, is kind of an all around solution for doing that.
I think I would probably take the opposite position, but we're getting a little late in the episode here and I don't want to get too deep on this, but just, I guess I'll frame the counter position that jumps to mind there. I think that I can definitely see reasons why they would go to that space. However, if everyone ended up in that space, it almost would become so commoditized that like you're truly pegging value to value and they're competing on that true price basis. And one of the key benefits of loyalty programs to airlines is to basically manage like unused supply or like empty inventory. Where they, instead of trying to go out and sell it at a discount, they might make that available to their loyalty members. And you'll find like the occasional good deal that makes you feel good about, like, I redeem my American Airlines miles for this lie-flat seat. And like building that builds the loyalty that gets you to keep trying to earn their currency that has other kind of economic advantages that they can layer on. Whereas if they let everything kind of become a function of cash value, then it becomes like easier for folks to kind of compare and shop around. And airlines have to manage their entire inventory through that system, which, you know, if you drop the price on it in cash, you're not actually incentivizing your loyalty members more than a non-loyalty member because the price dropped for both. So I'm thinking they're going to try to like smooth out those gaps by, you know, letting you have the occasional home run redemption and telling your friends about it on a podcast called Take Off a Points and Miles Contest by Tennis Travel.
I have a hot
That's
take.
My take on it.
Ooh.
Okay. Is it economic related and will there be math?
No. I predict that in 10 to 15 years, we're going to look back at now current present day and wonder, how did no banks or no programs or whatever have a transfer partner that would take you to space with points and miles?
Yes. I mean, Virgin might be the first logical one, right? Like,
I don't know.
That'd be
fun. It might cost a bajillion points, but I think in the next 10 to 15 years, you better use your points to take one of these.
Three award charts, domestic, international.
They actually did. I think it was like 2 million points to enter a raffle where they had like 150 potential tickets and the winner like won a flight on Virgin Galactic. So, so maybe more than just one person can do it in the future.
I would only spend my points on that if Katy Perry comes with me. So
oh, for sure. Boom.
Will you kiss the ground when you come back too?
Mm-hmm. Probably, yeah.
Well, now that our episode
you can only
a,
do that if you dress up as one of the sharks from her Super Bowl video.
Oh.
It has to be okay. Left shark, though.
Left shark, yes.
The one who goes off the rails, right? Yeah, right shark was just doing his job.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking now that we have a pop culture reference. We had an economics debate that covered inflation. We talked about a little bit of like health and bone broth stuff. Mm. We've kind of hit all the check boxes.
Get on my level.
A podcast episode complete. So I feel like it's probably time to kind of wrap this up.
Hold on.
Final thoughts. Travis has a final thought.
Travis's bone broth DoorDash just arrived.
Hold on. So before we wrap this up, you know, we've had our economics lesson. We've waxed poetically. But I want to take a step back because remember, the purpose of this episode is are points worth less than they used to be? And we can speculate all we want, but I'm going to share something that we've been kind of working on a little bit. We don't want questions like this. Are my points worth less? How much typical value can I get from a certain program? Like how much can I expect to redeem my Hyatt points? There's a lot of people out there who tell you your Hyatt points are worth 1.7 cents or whatever. All this is speculation based off of experience and expert opinion, which is what we've done here, right? We've shared why we think points are worth less. But we've been working on something to not just speculate, but actually provide a answer to this that's produced by data. And I'm not going to share all of them.
And by you, our users.
And by you.
The listeners, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had thousands of you input your trips into our redemption tracker in My10X. And this is great for you to be able to see your redemptions in one place. But where this really can power us, especially on this question of what my points are worth, is to actually answer that for you.
And this was one of our promises when we launched it to say that it's a symbiotic relationship with this. You give us the data and we will then turn around and share insights and information with you. Not to burst your bubble, Travis, but I wanted to make
that. No, please do. Please do. Yeah. So we've been analyzing some of the data. We might have some of this like publicly available by the time this episode is out. But, you know, we've had over 300 million points logged in our redemption tracker. And so we've gone in, looked at those. When you put in the cash values, all of this lets us look and see, are points worth less than they used to be? Now, we don't have historical data.
But we will.
But we will. We don't have data.
In 10 to 15 years.
Keep using it. Yeah, in 10 to 15 years. There you go.
No, let's all just go back and look up our old trips and add them, you know, retroactively.
Yeah. But enough of you have added some of your past trips from like kind of over the past year. And with all of this, some programs are getting more valuable over time, some are getting less, but I can actually tell you, unfortunately right now, compared to a year ago, your points are worth a little bit less.
Data don't lie.
Yeah. From Q2 of 2024, the average cent per point value that people were getting was 4.4 cents per point.
This is across all programs, not specific to a currency.
Correct. This is across all programs. It's stabilized between Q1 of 2025 and what we have so far for Q2, right around 2.8. Right around 2.8 cents per point.
There's some nuance here to it. So
yeah, there is some nuance. There's also the fact that we have more data, like more people have not backfilled trips. So it might have been those of you with high redemptions put in
we're
some
super
of your historical
about your
ones.
Trips, yeah.
Yeah. And now as more people are putting it in, we're actually seeing a normalization. So I want to be clear that I'm not making a definitive statement based off of the data that we've got. We also recognize that there's some limitations to the data as well. But this is exactly why what Matt said, putting your trips in isn't just for you to log, it's for us to be able to provide unbiased answers to you of what your points are actually worth. So that way you can know, am I getting a typical redemption? Am I getting a good redemption? What programs should I look at to redeem my points? And so go in, log those trips. So that way we can tell you more of this. You know, I can tell you right now as well. I'm going to look at,
well, while you're looking, while you're looking, I'll just spill the tea. In the coming months, you'll be able to see this in My10X on a program-by-program basis to know exactly how My10X users are, what the average, you know, Hyatt cent per point is, or American Airlines, or whatever. So that's coming.
Yeah. And then shortly thereafter, I propose that we put tickers on the top of our homepage.
You're done. You're done.
Yeah, like the value of Hyatt points is down 12% overnight on rumors of a devaluation. You know, this we literally just became an economics podcast today.
God, how boring.
You started it, man.
Like, yeah, I know.
How boring.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is I can tell you World of Hyatt, it's been pretty flat. Most people are getting right around 2.6 cents per point. It's ebbed and flow a little bit, but it's virtually been within that range. So really, really cool data that we can take from your inputs and give back to you to empower you to make.
And from a wide sample of users. I mean, that's the best part is, especially over time, that's just going to strengthen as more and more users. I mean, remember, this has only been live for, what, 2 or 3 months? So obviously tons of great uptake on it. But, you know, 6 months, a year from now, that 300 million is going to be like billions.
Trillions,
maybe. Yeah, that'll be 10 to 15 years will be the trillions of points that we'll have seen redeemed.
So go in, log your trips, keep doing it, because we want the answer of what are my points worth to not be what does Matt think they're worth, what does Emily think they're worth, what does Travis think they're worth, what does Bryce think they're worth, because our experience is going to be different from someone else's. And the more data points that we have in there lets us provide you this information in an unbiased way. So you can know this is what people who are learning from us, engaging with us, are typically getting as a value for their points.
What are we going to do when someone logs, like, I redeemed 2 million Virgin points and I actually won the trip to space and the cash value is somewhere around like $8 million. So,
well,
it's like, boop, like
to the moon.
That outlier.
Yes.
To the moon, literally.
Virgin points to the moon.
Yeah. Well, that is exciting. I'm learning about a lot of this as it's being said here in the podcast, and that excites me even more. But yeah, you know, go ahead and toss those trips in there. It's your own trophy case, but we're using that data to give you better information to make decisions and get a higher cents per point than everyone else. And now you actually know that. Not only did we create a valuation structure, but we also created a leaderboard. So so if you log like your top five like point redemption, it should like prompt you for the three letters, and then there's like a scrolling like scoreboard, like, you know, BRC is like currently in first. Like,
you're done.
Yeah.
You and your ticker leaderboard.
Yep.
We're wrapping up. We're getting carried away here.
That is my job, to get carried away. So let's tie this one up. Anyone have any final thoughts about economics, inflation, bone broth, value of points and miles, celebrities in space, what did I miss, data, or this podcast?
I don't know that I could add anything else.
Except for your trips to the redemption tracker.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a left shark costume headed your way.
Oh, great.
Awesome. Well, now that we've come to the end, a couple quick reminders before we close. We have tons of resources to help you make the most of your points and miles, even in this changing and dynamic landscape. I'd encourage you to check out 10X Travel Plus. That's our paid membership program where you get 2 one-on-one video consults per year with our staff and 1 free award booking each year. It just takes kind of the hardest parts out of points and miles. It's only $199 per year right now, although after seeing Matt's inflation analysis, maybe it'll go to like $212.
It's really only about $175, $2015. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everything we do runs through our free tool called My10X. You can find that on our website at my.10xtravel.com or linked in the show notes. That's where you can add all of the cards, see all of your loyalty points in one place, track your redemptions, see the value of points and miles here soon, get recommendations on my next card based on your exact scenario. It just takes all of the hassle out of points and miles and puts the entire thing on easy mode. If you want to hop in our Facebook group, maybe you'll be the person to put us over 400,000 members. We should be crossing that right around the time this episode launches. You can come and talk about this topic. You can answer questions. You can engage with the readers, get inspiration for your trips, and soon be able to judge your cents per point valuation against everyone else as they post theirs and snarkily, I got 4.5 cents out of mine. Like, that'll be fun. And be sure to check out our free course, which is within My10X. It teaches you all the basics. If you happen to find this episode first before any others, and it sounds like we're kind of talking a foreign language, everything is described in that course. It'll teach you all the basics. It'll get you on the road to where you can start thinking about what can we wax poetically about right now? What golden age are we living in? It's a beautiful spot to be, let me tell you. And the first step to getting there is to start with our course. So from all of us here, for our topics of economics and pop culture and all
class
that.
Class dismissed.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Matt, no, you take it out. Matt, you say the final words here.
I already did. No, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time. This has been Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. You are now dismissed.